In 1980, I was about 8 years old, and personal computers were brand new. And you all may remember that time as well. But to be a kid at that time and to experience for the first time the ability to make a machine play a song or to draw a picture on the screen was something that was really, really magical. And that was a world that was largely invented by two guys, Steve Jobs and Bill Gates. And we lost one of those guys last week. In my own life, it's been kind of an interesting journey because to be part of that experience, to be in that world where computers, you know, suddenly open up this whole new vast range of possibilities about how you can express yourself and just the possibilities of you know, our own humanity. It was something that was easy to be kind of sucked into, you know, just technology. And so, you know, growing up as a young teenager or whatnot, as Laura mentioned, I, you know, built computers in cardboard boxes. I was doing computers. I started a computer business when I was 14 years old, you know, while I was in high school. And by the time I got to getting ready to go to college, I asked my grandfather, you know, well, what should I major in? You know, I'm lost. I don't, you know, really know. You know, I'm thinking about computer science, but, you know, that's just because I know computers. Like, you know, what should I do? And he said, well, you know, you don't really want to major in computer science. You should major in liberal arts or something, you know, that is expressive of the arts and whatnot, because all that technical stuff, you know, he was a self-taught engineer. All that technical stuff you can learn on your own later on in your life, but the arts and all the great works of humanity, you know, that's stuff that you really have to take in, and if you can get a good education in that, that's good for you. And so I kind of looked at that advice and kind of said, that doesn't make any sense to me, you know. You know, I'm a computer guy. The computers, you know. So I went to Johns Hopkins and kind of played around in a couple different majors. I did some behavioral biology. I did some computer science. And before long, I was completely overwhelmed. I'd met my wife. My wife wanted to buy a Macintosh, actually, and because I was running a retail computer business, I said, you can just use my computer, you know, it's fine. You know, she's this attractive young lady, you know, so I'm like, come over, it'll be fine. And so she's using my computer, and within 2 years, we were married, and I had been completely just overwhelmed by school and what to do about it, and before too long, I had reconfigured my major to be liberal arts. Surprise, surprise. And I thought, well, gee, what a wise man my grandfather was. And as time has gone on, really what I've realized, and I think this is something that Steve Jobs' life has really shown, is that computers are not about technology, because that's the how. You know, technology is how we do something. What we really need to be thinking about is why we're doing something, right? And, you know, what underlies it? What do we want to become as people? Who are we, you know? And so just a couple of short anecdotes about Steve Jobs that I think illustrate that point. One is where he was going through his own struggles with education and trying to decide what he wanted to do. And he took a calligraphy class at Reed College. And he wasn't quite sure why he was taking a calligraphy class, but he knew it was beautiful. And he knew that he was able to learn, you know, about classic letter forms and about what the value of, you know, handwritten communication and typography had to our humanity and to our species. And 10, 15 years later, that experience made it into the Macintosh as the first real support of typefaces in a computer. And, you know, wow, that's really powerful. Another just little brief anecdote about Steve. He was called up by this guy who had invented this whole new branch of science, which I won't get into now, it's very complicated. But his name was Stephen Wolfram, who also invented the computer program Mathematica. And he called him up and said, Steve, I really want a quote from you for the back cover of my book because, you know, I've got this new book about this new kind of science and all this. It's literally called A New Kind of Science. It's kind of egotistical. But anyway, so Steve kind of, you know, resisted and, you know, eventually said to him, look, you know, Isaac Newton didn't need back cover quotes. Why don't you just put pictures on the back? And Stephen Wolfram wrote a piece last week saying how grateful he was for that advice because it helped to frame the greatness of his work. And I think that that's really, you know, I mean, I don't know if he said it quite that way, but it was, I thought it was instructive just that sometimes you shouldn't try to frame things in small boxes. You need to think big. And then another time, Steve was noticing on the iPhone that a pixel was out of place in Google's icon on their search thing. And he called up a Google engineer and said, yeah, listen, it was on a Sunday, and I think he might have been at worship services. And then, you know, he said, he called him back like an hour later and said, listen, there's a pixel that's just slightly out of place, a little yellow pixel in the Google logo. If you guys could just fix that, that would be great. You know, and it shows the kind of obsessive level of detail that he really had for his products and for, you know, his wishes for humanity, I think, that they'd be expressive in some way of a desire for perfection. So when the news came of his passing last week, it really hit me like a ton of bricks, and I wasn't even 100% sure why at first. But then I started to realize that over time, Steve Jobs really, he had been the bulwark against the conventional wisdom. He'd been the guy that the Wall Street Journal would sort of check with first before saying how something was going to be, you know? And I think now about the possibility that, you know, HP, God help us, and Dell, and, you know, some of these other tech companies, and Microsoft, are going to shape how the world that we live in unfolds. And that terrifies me, you know, quite frankly, because, you know, to have somebody like Steve there to say, no, let's make it more beautiful. No, let's remove something and make it simpler. That was true genius. And in a 2005 commencement address that he gave at Stanford University, which has been widely quoted, he mentioned the back cover of the Whole Earth Catalog, which was a countercultural piece produced in the late 1960s by Stuart Brand in Berkeley. And on the back cover, this was as they were signing off, it was the last Whole Earth Catalog, he had a picture of a country road and a little planetscape, and it said, stay hungry, stay foolish. And I think that there is no better advice for us as we enter into this, you know, brave new next world of technology, for all of us to stay hungry and stay foolish. Thank you.